Right, I'm going to start taking some questions. Ed's got one. Okay. Is it a personal question? Can we address it with the whole group? Okay. So if it's all equity trust IRAs, you only have to have the check made payable to equity trust. You don't have to have an equity trust, FBO, blah, 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 blah. You could do just equity trust, then send it in with coupons, and then we split it into each account. Yeah, yeah. Yep, you got it. Thank you, Ed. Good to see you. Oh, you are? Okay. All righty. So you got a SEP, you real estate agent? Okay. So you can take your SEP and convert it to the Roth. You may only want to do a portion of it so you don't have a large tax consequence. But you can do that, yes. Or you could just self-direct the SEP as a SEP. It grows tax deferred. Sure. Yep, you can convert it to the Roth. Okay. Yep, that makes sense. Now you'll have a 5-year seasoning period on the conversion from the SEP to the Roth. But that's okay. You start using it, you know, after 65, call it. And it's all tax-free when you distribute it. Right, each year you'd have to, yep, you got it. You're welcome. You can have as many IRAs as you want. It's just you couldn't, like, set up multiple IRAs and then put, you know, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. Correct. You could if you wanted to. Yeah, you'd have more fees. It'd be hard to. It'd be more difficult to administer, but you could. Yeah, that'd be a prohibited transaction. Yeah. Oh yeah, I suppose if you denied the benefit, if you struck that out in the agreement, that's what you'd want to do. You want to strike it out in the agreement. That way it's not in writing that you can do that. But yeah, I don't see why you couldn't do that. Be prohibited, yeah. Yep. You're welcome. No. After 65, you can't contribute. Yep. Yep, you can still grow it, you just can't contribute. Yeah, so as long as you're eligible to make contributions, if you make too much money, you can't contribute directly to a Roth IRA. They're called modified adjusted gross income limits. So you may have to continue to fund the SEP and then convert over. But in theory, you could get money in there. You just have to go about it maybe a little different way if you're still making a lot of income. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Not stocks, just because of the nature of those traditional assets, you couldn't do that. Yeah. Loans, if you're doing private lending, you could. That's an easy one. You know, if you were investing in a startup business, I suppose the answer would be yes. You know, you'd have your IRA's equity and then your personal equity in that startup business. I suppose you could do that. But, you know, primarily the whole partnering concept is more real estate, private lending. Yep. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. There's two reasons why I don't like it. One, administratively, there's no good way to do it. it's considered under the provisions of under the Treasury regulations a trustee to trustee transfer. But because like nobody does it, there's really no good way to like code it. So we always have challenges with it. We'll do it for you, but it's unorthodox, so to speak. Another reason why I don't like it is because although you're going from tax deferred into an HSA and then you got the tax free, that's kind of the concept is like, you know, if you don't have the money to pay for an expense, then If you don't have the money to pay for an expense, for a healthcare expense, you don't have to take money out of the traditional and pay taxes. You can slide it over to the HSA. But, you know, some people try to use it as just a funding vehicle for the HSA. You'd be better off, to be honest with you, contributing to the HSA to get the tax deduction for it, and now it's going to grow tax-free. That's correct. Once in your life, you can fund it. Yep. Yep.
Right.
Are you introducing
me? We're ready to
roll. Okay, all right.
All right. So, folks, it is 12:15. Get your lunch if you've got your lunch ticket, and you have at exactly 15 minutes before 12:30. What's 12:30? By 12:30 today, we need to give the hotel the exact count for the dinner tonight. So if you have not yet purchased your ticket for the banquet, but you are planning to go, we need you to go get your ticket out front at the check-in desk. They're $50. They still have a few tickets left. And oh, by the way, if you're wondering whether or not it's worth going, so if you've been enjoying networking with folks, but you like even more to walk away $1,000 richer tonight, all right, you might be the winner of the real estate match game. So purchase your ticket. All right, so for your lunch session, first of all, let's give Equity Trust a round of applause. Thank you for the lunch. A lot of you, some of you may have been here for the 90-minute session that John just did. And for some of you, this is your first time hearing John Bowen. So who would agree with this statement that the only thing better than making money on a real estate deal is making money that you don't have to pay taxes on? Every single hand in this room should be up. All right, who also agrees with this statement? That the only thing better than not paying taxes is not paying taxes and also not going to jail for it. All right? So, we got a lot of good news for you. There's a way to do that. And it's by doing the same deals that you already know how to do. But you're doing them in a tax-free or a tax-deferred retirement, health, or education account. So nobody knows the details of how to make that happen better than John Bowens. John is a native of Ohio. He's from, I learned a little known fact about John. He is from Mentor, Ohio, which is a city a little east of Cleveland. And he's not only an experienced real estate, experienced self-directed IRA investor himself, he also gets to do something that most all of us don't get an opportunity to do. And that is he hears the stories, the success stories of the thousands, okay, of IRA investors that he educates every year. John is the education director for Equity Trust Company. And today he's going to share the strategies, the latest strategies that he and his clients are using to invest in rentals, do joint ventures, and master lease properties in their retirement plans. So let's all welcome John Bowens.
Awesome. All right. So I think just about everybody in this room has either been to one of my sessions this weekend or another session or has a self-directed IRA, correct? Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure. If for some reason you have not, we'll catch you up to speed. But the goal of this session, which is fairly short, just over the lunch hour, is not for me to stand up here and lecture, but rather for you to ask questions and me to answer those and do as many as I can. So we already got one here, so let's get it going. Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, okay, so question. I'll repeat the questions, absolutely. So, gentleman's question was, I buy a property, I use the IRA titling, I use my account number so that my name's not a public record, but can the court come and say, we're going to order and have a subpoena for who is the actual account holder? The answer is yes, just like a trust. Now, with a trust, the court has to go through the trustee, and then they have to have an order for the trustee to divulge the beneficiaries. It would almost be the same because they have to first go to Equity Trust as the non-fiduciary trustee. It's really the same concept. So they would have to come to us. Now, I'm glad you brought up the question because we get calls every single day from people that are trying to bird dog properties, right? And they'll call us up and they'll say, hey, I'm looking for the owner on 123 Main Street. It says Equity Trust and then some account number. So they think we own the property. So our agents, and I manage multiple call centers within our organization, so you can test this out if you want to have some fun with it. And so when they call in and say this, we say, well, that's one of our customers. We're a self-directed IRA custodian, and we have to adhere to the Bank Privacy Act. We can't divulge any information about our customer. So then usually they say, well, what if I give you my information and then you send them an email? No, we're not going to do that, right? And then they usually try to press a little bit harder. Well, what if I send you a certified letter, blah, blah, blah? And we say, well, it sounds like you're a real estate investor. Is that correct? Usually they're like, yeah, well, I'm a real estate investor. Okay, great. Do you have an IRA or 401k that you would like to establish with Equity Trust and move it over? You know, and sometimes they just hang up the phone, and other times we find a new client, right? So did they answer the question? Okay. Second part. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to repeat the question, and I'm going to go back to that deal. So the question is about this transaction, my rental. So I have a partnership between my Roth 55, my traditional 35, and I personally, or my LLC, 10%. So all the profits and all the expenses flow 55, 35, and 10 like we talked about. All right, everybody with me? Gentleman's question was about property management. All right? Now, things get a little bit gray with self-directed IRAs. The tax code says that a disqualified person, which would be me to my IRA, cannot furnish goods, services, or facilities. Services is very broad and very vague. So the question oftentimes becomes, well, if I'm talking with the tenants, if I'm working with them to sign leases, is that considered a service? Some people argue it is. Some people argue it's not. What I can tell you is we have hundreds of thousands of clients that do this on their IRA properties. Could it be tested in the future? I suppose it could. The way we look at it is it's administrative oversight. Think of it like managing a stock portfolio. The IRS is okay with people managing stocks and mutual funds in their IRAs, right? Clicking the mouse, buying the stocks, subscribing to all kinds of periodicals to make stock decisions. That's okay. Aren't I really doing the same thing with my IRA rental? Here's where I can cross the line, however. If I start doing the physical sweat equity, that's when I could get myself in trouble. So let me tell you how I manage this rental property. I don't have a property manager per se. I have an investor friend of mine, Mike, who I've known since I was 15 years old. I started working with him for a real estate company when I was 15 years old. He went in the direction of managing his own construction company. Him and I were doing construction for years. I went in the direction of more corporate finance and what I do now. But Mike and I stayed friends for a long time. So he wants to get involved in owning properties himself. We own rentals. So I said, hey, Mike, why don't you help me out on this deal? All right. And I'll help you start buying rental property. He says, okay, it sounds like a good deal. And I said, I'm going to pay you for this, though. All right. This isn't like you're going to do this for free. I'm going to pay you to help me manage this property. Now, what is he not doing? He is not leasing. He is not engaging in leasing activities. He is not engaging the tenants other than, hey, I'm here to fix the toilet. All right? He's not engaging in any of that because if he was, he would have to be in the state of Ohio a licensed realtor, right? If he's serving as a true property manager. He is not conducting the activities that would require him to do so. He's only conducting the administrative activities. So here's what we did. We set up a bank account specifically in Mike's name for this property. All right? Could Mike abscond with the money? Yes, I suppose he could. But that's why I have access to the bank accounts in terms of online access. I have the logins on all the information so I know money's going in and out. So Mike gets money from the tenants, whether it's cash or check. Sometimes they do pay in cash. He deposits the money into a bank account. He pays for all the expenses, utilities. So the tenants are paying, of course, for everything with the exception of water and sewer. So he pays the water and sewer bill every month. I pay him a little bit of money for this, of course. When there's work that needs to be done, he has money in the bank account from the rents to go over there and buy the materials and do the work. So the incidental fluid masters and flappers, things of that nature, he handles. And then every month, he writes a check for the net rental proceeds. So we keep a little bit of a slush in there in case something comes up. And then every month, we have a spreadsheet that we both have access to. It's a shared spreadsheet. And he fills in his information. I fill in the information as money's getting kicked back in. He cuts a check from his bank account for this property to my LLC and then to my Roth and traditional. In fact, it's not a check. He does the direct deposit. So he just logs in through the direct deposit system and zaps the money in. And then the LLC, that doesn't exist in the equity trust ecosystem because that's my personal interest. So I just have my LLC checking account with Chase Bank, and he just does a direct deposit right into the account. In fact, it's just Chase to Chase, so it's very easy to go in and just redistribute the money over to the other bank account. So that's how we manage this property. You definitely, if you're going to do partnerships like this, there are ways to do it without having somebody like that. But I like this because, number one, I feel like I might have more exposure than most people. That's not an arrogant statement, but there's a lot of videos out there where I teach people how to not pay taxes on deals. And so there's a possibility that, you know, somebody from the IRS might say, hey, you know what, why don't we audit this guy and see what he's doing in his retirement plans? And so, you know, if that's the case, I feel comfortable because I have separation. I have insulation. You know, Mike's the property manager. Now, property manager in the sense of those activities. In terms of leases, I'm managing all of that, right? So I get my lease agreement. I work with the tenant. I get it signed. We do our background check. That's what I call administrative oversight. What I stay away from is the physical hands-on work. So what I always say is, the moment that I pull my truck into that driveway and drop the tailgate is when I start getting myself into trouble. So I try to stay away from that. You know, I'll tell you, we own rentals outside of our IRA and inside of our self-directed IRAs. I come from the background of working in those trades. I still do a lot of work on our non-IRA deals. And yeah, it does irritate me a little bit with our IRA deals because I'm like, you know, I got to pay Mike like $150 to go over and put a fluid master and flapper in. I literally could do that in 45 minutes with a blindfold on for $9.97. But hey, you know what? All the tax-free upside on this, it's not worth it to me to do that. And another thing is, let's face it, we don't always value our time, right? I get my time back by not going over there and doing the physical work. Yes. Maximum amount that you can contribute to a Roth IRA is $6,000 when you're under 50, $7,000 when 50 and over. But I think where you were going with this is, what if I make too much money, my income? Doesn't it shut off? It does. Okay, so here's how it works. if you are over a certain, what they call modified adjusted gross income, which for all intents and purposes for most people is their AGI. So just think your AGI. If your AGI is over, if you're single, about $130,000, you can't make a full contribution, $6,000 or $7,000 to a Roth IRA. There's what they call a phase-out range. Just go to the IRS website and search MAGI for Roth, and you'll see it. If you're married filing jointly, and make over $200,000 roughly, you can't make a full contribution to a Roth IRA. It starts at about $197,000, and then it phases out just over $200,000. So what's the solution for this if you make too much money? There is what they call a backdoor Roth IRA contribution. What is this? What this is you first contribute to a traditional IRA, and then you immediately convert over to a Roth IRA. Now, this did not exist forever. In 2010, they changed the law that said, okay, no matter how much money you make, you can convert from a traditional to a Roth. So that's called a backdoor Roth contribution. Now, here's what's interesting. Recent public service announcement. There was some anti-self-directed IRA legislation. Who's heard of that? Right? All right. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about that, maybe? Yes, please. Okay. Let's talk about that. Yes. Okay, how much can you put in? All right, so if you are, right now, the way the law is, you could be making $1 million, and you could contribute your $6,000 or $7,000, depending on your age, whether you're under or over 50, and then immediately convert over to a Roth. The phase-out is, if you're single, for example, and you make about $130,000 to, I think it's around $140,000, as you get closer to that $140,000, you can only put a small fraction of the $6,000 or $7,000 in. Most people just don't even do it at that point because I don't want to figure out the math and only be able to put a portion of the $6,000 or $7,000. I want to put the full $6,000 or $7,000 in. So backdoor my way in. Put my money into a traditional IRA or maybe a SEP IRA and then immediately convert over to a Roth. You're talking about a non-deductible IRA contribution, which is if you have access to a 401k or employer plan, which not everybody is in that situation. So, glad you brought that up, though, because this is then going to feed right into the IRA legislation that we want to talk about here. And then I'll take your question after that. So, and this might catch some of your questions, too. So, if you make a contribution to a traditional IRA, and you have access to a 401k or your spouse does, you might not get a deduction for that traditional IRA contribution. It came about in 1986. It's called a non-deductible IRA contribution. Just go to the IRS website, type in non-deductible IRA contribution. When you file your tax return, you have to file an 8606 attached to your tax return. What this is if you're have access to a 401k or pension plan with work, or your spouse does, and you make over a certain amount, your contribution to your traditional IRA is non-deductible. You can still make it, but you're not going to get a tax deduction for it. And then when you eventually take the money out after 59 and a half, you don't have to pay taxes on that incremental amount that you contributed. You actually have to do the math, and a portion of your distributions will be taxable, and a portion of them won't. Who do you think actually figures out that math? Like, no one. So most people double tax themselves. CPAs and accountants usually tell people, no, you can't make a contribution to your traditional IRA because you make too much money and you have access to a 401k or other employer plan at work. You can still make the contribution. It's just that they tell you not to because the math is a little hard to deal with. You got a follow-up? Friend at 375, okay. Okay, good news. He can't contribute directly to a Roth IRA, but nothing right now is going to stop him from converting from a traditional to a Roth. Because right now, there are no income limits on converting from a traditional to a Roth, but that could change. Yes, so that's where we're going now. So legislation, Build Back Better Act. Everyone's heard of that? The infrastructure part was passed last night, if anyone heard. The other part, the Build Back Better, which has all the IRA info in there, IRA stuff, that's still being worked on. Okay, so I suppose that's good news. What was really bad news is, call it 3 weeks ago, some of you probably saw a lot of information on this. There was a lot of anti-self-directed IRA legislation that was part of the Build Back Better. Some important ones. What the government was saying is that you, once you get to $10 million in your IRA, you got to start taking distributions. You got to take out 50% of any amount over $10 million. And then once you get to $20 million, you got to start exhausting everything, distributing everything, and you got to start with your Roth account. You got to draw down the Roth accounts. They don't like Roth IRAs because they're tax-free, right? They don't like them because a technology billionaire, Peter Thiel, grew his Roth IRA supposedly to like $5 million. So the government said, oh, we need to intervene and create laws around this. Quite frankly, what Peter Thiel did was a blatant prohibited transaction. If I was an IRS agent, I would look at 4975 of the tax code and I'd say that that's a self-dealing prohibited transaction, which is obvious, and blow up the IRA. There's no reason to legislate it out, but we'll leave the politics aside. This was put into effect, and so now we have to deal with it as an industry, which we've done at Equity Trust and other people have done, like John Heyer, who's here at this conference. He did a really great job. And really have to give him credit for eliminating that anti-IRA legislation. So they're trying to get rid of these large IRAs. All right, now, the other part of the legislation was addressing prohibited transactions. IRAs investing in businesses. So this goes back to Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel took a Roth IRA with a small amount of money, invested in shares of PayPal. I think before it was even PayPal. PayPal then became PayPal, sold to, I think, eBay for billions of dollars, right? That was Elon Musk. A lot of people don't know Peter Thiel, but they know Elon. Well, Peter Thiel had his investment with his Roth IRA. He took like $5,000 and grew it into millions. And then he put it into Facebook and he made more millions. And then it got to billions somehow. So what the government said is, okay, no more IRAs investing in syndications or startup companies, LLCs, corporations, where that issuer of that security, the promoter, call them, the syndicator, is asking for the investor's financial situation, their net worth, their annual income. What does this equate to when you hear the term accredited or sophisticated investor? So if you want to invest in an apartment building syndication, most of those are underwritten as what's called a Regulation D, a Rule 506 Reg D offering. Who's heard of those? Right? A real estate syndication or online crowdfunding. Those you would not be able to use your IRA to invest. Not only would you not be able to use your IRA to invest in those offerings, if you have one of them in your IRA, the law was saying that you had 2 years to get it out. So could you imagine the vacuum that that would create in the real estate business? Billions of dollars in retirement money invested in these real estate syndications. That was taken out completely. So people like John Heyer, Jeff Watson, our company founder's son, Rich Desich, you better believe they were in Washington talking to people, meeting here in Ohio with senators, congressmen, and women, right, making sure our voice was heard. There were our clients and investors all across the country that were explaining the detrimental effects of this legislation. That was all removed from the legislation. The other thing that it was addressing is if you wanted to invest in a company where you were the manager, that would be a prohibited transaction. That also could have been detrimental. The good news is, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this, owning real estate in an IRA, private lending with an IRA, none of that was brought to the attention in the law. So people that own real estate in an IRA, as long as they're doing it directly with the IRA, they're not going through one of these checkbook LLC IRAs, they were good. And that's important because I had so many people through the course of the last few months calling me in an absolute panic. And they say, John, I was told my self-directed IRA is done. It's finished. Self-directed IRAs are gone. Everybody's going bankrupt. You guys are finished. And I said, okay, well, hang on. Let me pull up your account. And I pull up their account, and they have a couple properties in there. I say, you have nothing to worry about. Where are you getting your information from? Well, I read an article online. Well, that's the problem. Let me direct you to the actual law. I'm reading it, you know, verbatim here. Okay, so that was in there. All right, fast forward. What has been put back in? All right, there's a couple things that have been put back in that could potentially impact you. And this relates to the Roth conversion stuff we've been talking about. So here's number one. If you want to convert from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, so you already got money in the traditional, you want to convert to the Roth. If you make more than $400,000, $450,000 married filing jointly, you can't convert from a traditional to a Roth. So your buddy who's at about $375,000, probably going to be okay. Now this hasn't been passed, okay? It's just been put in. So we'll see what happens here. But worst case scenario, people over 400, 450 married filing jointly won't be able to convert from a traditional to Roth. Prior to 2010, if you made over 100,000, you couldn't convert from a traditional to Roth. So I'm not a fan of this, but we'll deal with it. All right, we'll deal with it. Second, if you make a traditional IRA non-deductible contribution, so let's throw this out here. Let's say you make $250,000. Make $250,000, and you say, hey, why don't I do a backdoor? Contribute to the traditional, convert to the Roth, because I'm over 400 or 450. If you make a after-tax contribution, non-deductible IRA contribution, if you're making $250,000 and you also have a 401k at work, or your spouse does, you're not going to get a deduction for your traditional IRA contribution. And you can't convert non-deductible IRA contributions to a Roth. They close that loophole. Now, let's say you're not working for a company. You don't have access to a 401k. Let's say you're just paying yourself through your real estate business, you know, $50,000, $60,000. You're good. Make your contribution, convert it to the Roth, because it's not a non-deductible. You just have to worry about those non-deductible IRA contributions. You can't convert them. And then also, they're eliminating a in-plan conversion from a 401k to a Roth with after-tax contributions. Has anyone heard of this concept of the Mega Roth IRA? Yeah, so there's this concept of the Mega Roth IRA. I think it was actually coined by Senator Ron Wyden, which, again, not going to get into politics here, but Ron Wyden, who's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, is very anti-self-directed IRA, incredibly anti-self-directed IRA, doesn't like them, wants them to go away. He's one of the people that spearheaded all of this anti-IRA legislation that went into effect. He's a senator from Oregon, okay? Again, not here to get political, just here to be factual, all right? Not going to mention his political affiliation. You can research that on your own. I'll leave that for another topic of discussion, maybe privately. All right, so if you want your voice to be heard, write your senators, congressmen, congresswomen, and tell them that, hey, this could be detrimental to me. The non-deductible IRA contribution one, very, very anti that. Because I'm thinking somebody that makes $250,000, has got three kids, they go to private school because they can't send them to public school in their area they live in, they're at a really real disadvantage. You know, I think somebody making $450,000 to $500,000, I think we can deal with that, not being able to do the backdoor contribution. Yes. Yes, so if he's got $750,000, he wants to convert that to a Roth. Probably not going to convert all of it. Probably going to do a portion of it in year one, portion of it in year two, portion of it in year three. As long as they're not over $450,000, you know. Yeah, they're at $375,000, then go ahead and start converting over in chunks. to not exceed 400 or 450. Great question. So if anybody didn't hear, what's being asked is if I use my IRA and loan money to a syndication that then has senior debt, like an apartment building deal, right, am I subject to UBIT tax? The answer is no, because your IRA is a lender. Your IRA is receiving interest income. You're not getting a percentage of the profits as an equity partner. Therefore, you're not exposed to the UBIT tax. That's a good way to actually fund syndication deals and avoid UBIT is by being a lender on the deal instead of being an equity partner, which would then expose you to UBIT tax. That's correct. You'd be liable for that tax. If you take an equity, yep. Yeah, you want to form it as interest, simple interest. Yes, sir. And then I'll catch your question over here. Yes. Yes, good question. So, yes, so 5-year seasoning period is what he's mentioning. So let's explain for a second. 5-year seasoning says that you have 5 years to wait when you fund your Roth IRA before you can start taking tax and penalty free withdrawals. It really doesn't matter for people that are under the age of 55, because you got to be 59 and a half and the account is seasoned for 5 years. 5-year seasoning period starts January 1 in the year in which you make your first dollar contribution to a Roth IRA. And it doesn't matter with what financial institution. So if I set up a Fidelity Roth IRA 10 years ago and funded it, I'm seasoned across the board. I could open up a totally separate Roth with Equity Trust and already be seasoned because the seasoning started on that Fidelity Roth 10 years ago. But, yep, good. So this is where we're going next. What if I convert money, however, from a traditional to a Roth? There are what are called ordering rules. If you wanted to go to publication 590B, it talks about these ordering rules. And so what this means is if I had, let's say, $100,000 in a Roth IRA that was fully seasoned, and then I take another $100,000 and I convert it over to the Roth IRA, the same Roth, so now I got $200,000. The initial $100,000 that's already seasoned, providing them over 59.5, I can take that out at any time tax and penalty free. But if I start dipping into that unseasoned converted amount, that $100,000, then I'm going to pay penalties, taxes and penalties. So there's the ordering rules. Let's say I converted another $100,000 in the following year. I'd have to wait for that amount to season for 5 years. That's correct. Yep. That is correct. Did you have a question here? Okay. All right. We're going to go here, and then we'll move on. They can, just as if it was in an LLC. That being said, it's my IRA, not me personally, and then I got my personal interest in an LLC. Now, asset protection in IRAs, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that IRAs are judgment-proof. There's nothing on this planet Earth that's judgment-proof, right? They can try to come after an IRA. We haven't seen a lot of success with this. It's very challenging. Many attorneys don't want to take that type of work on. It could happen. IRAs don't have the same asset protection as an LLC. That's why some people do form LLCs. Here's our approach on this. We buy more liability coverage. So this property has a $1 million liability policy instead of the typical recommended maybe $400,000 to $500,000 liability policy. It's very cheap, right, to buy more liability coverage. So most people with IRAs take that line of defense first. If we start building a large enough rental portfolio in our IRAs, that's where we might look at then forming an LLC for an added layer of asset protection. And then you had one more, right? Technically, they could, yeah. Be difficult, but technically they could. I'm going to go here, and then over there. Okay, yes, ma'am. Okay. So, easy one. Got a 401k, previous employer, you're eligible, you can roll that over to an IRA, no taxes or penalties. In terms of then the use of the money, you can't take the money and put it into your own personal LLC or buy properties you own personally. That would all be prohibited. But the IRA, you on behalf of your IRA can go out and start buying properties individually. The IRA owns it. The IRA pays for all the expenses. IRA receives all profits. Yep. All right. Yes. Difference between solo 401k and traditional IRA. Solo 401ks are for self-employed individuals that are reporting earned income that they're paying Medicare and Social Security tax on. Very important. Got to be eligible. Can't have any employees either. A solo 401k allows you to contribute up to $19,500 a year when you're under 50, up to $26,000 when you're 50 and over. And then there's an employer deferral amount, which can be up to 20% of your self-employment income. So quick example. Let's say you're paying yourself $100,000. Paying Medicare and Social Security tax. Now, I know real estate investors are very anti-Medicare and Social Security tax. Would you agree? All right, I'm one of them. It's okay, right? Well, that's a problem for people that want a solo 401k. And it's an even bigger problem because there's a lot of people out there that open solo 401ks and they're not even eligible to do so because they don't have any earned income. So you got to make sure you qualify for this. But if you're making $100,000, you get, let's say, $26,000 in, assuming you're over 50, and then you do 20% of $100,000, which is $20,000, you're getting $46,000 into the solo 401k in 1 year. A lot more than the $6,000 or $7,000 you can do in an IRA. With a solo 401k versus a traditional IRA, you have actually both options. You can put money into a tax-deferred bucket and get a deduction, or you can put money into a tax-free Roth bucket. So conceivably, you can get that entire over $40,000 into the Roth bucket of that 401k, providing that you are eligible. All right, yes, ma'am. You're waiting. Can you convert your self-directed IRA to a self-directed solo 401k? If you're eligible for the solo 401k, any tax-deferred traditional IRA, you can absolutely move right into the solo 401k. That's easy. Happens all the time. Roth IRAs, though, a Roth IRA can never go into the Roth bucket of a solo 401k. That'll have to stay a Roth IRA. Okay? Yes, sir. Be right behind. You definitely have the ability to hire an attorney and defend yourself. Or defend yourself, I guess, on your own, but most likely you hire a tax attorney. And I know one of them that does this professionally and has success with it. He's floating around here. His name is John Heyer. So very little enforcement, if you will, I'll say. The audits are few and far between. The ones that we see are where someone does a blatant, quite frankly, stupid, prohibited transaction. And usually it's because they're not working with a custodian. They have a checkbook LLC IRA, which is a loaded gun, and it's put in the wrong hands of someone. When you're working with a custodian, we look at your transaction. We can't flush out everything. But if you're trying to do something that's blatantly prohibited and we see it every day, we stop the transaction. If we see a loan and the borrower is John Smith and the account holder is John Smith, you better believe we're going to call them and say, well, who's John Smith? I mean, it legitimately could be a third party, right? So we're not going to just immediately jump to the conclusion. We're going to ask first. But if you say, well, yeah, that's me. I'm borrowing money from my IRA. I went to a seminar last weekend, and they told me I could do it. Well, no, you can't do that. So we actually stop people from doing prohibited transactions. So cases are few and far between. The ones that are, they're people that are doing blatant prohibited transactions. How does the IRS know? Every year, custodians like Equity Trust have to send to the IRS a form called a 5498. And there's a little box. It's 15B. And there's different codes that have to be used. So we actually have to report what types of assets that you have in your account. Now, there's a code if you have a single-member LLC. You better believe single-member LLCs are known to be prohibited transaction, call it fertile grounds for the IRS. And so they can quickly look at 5498 if they wanted to with account sizes that are substantial, right? Because that means more money if it's prohibited. The smaller accounts, they're probably not going to worry about. Once you get north of 500,000, there's a lot more meat on the bone for them to go after. Where am I going? Right here? Yeah. Yeah, so... So guy starts a consulting business, he's actually doing work, he's charging for services, he pays himself, and he contributes to the solo 401k, absolutely. You see it happen all the time. Yes. Yeah, so the question is for everybody is, I was told I can't invest in my own deals. So there's truth to that in the sense that if I own a property now personally, okay, so we have a rental that we own in our LLC. There's no way for my IRA to get involved in that deal because it's in our personal LLC. This deal here, yes, I'm personally, as well as my IRAs are involved, but I did it from the very beginning. So I partnered from the very beginning. I bought it for 63, partnering 55, 35, and 10, all from the very beginning. IRAs are on title, LLC is on title, and then all profits and all expenses are flowing 55, 35, and 10. You will find people will say, oh, you can't do business with yourself, that's prohibited. Well, no, if you do it right, you do it proportionally from the very beginning, it's okay. You just got to make sure you follow the rules, and you have to be good at keeping records. All right. Am I going here? I think I'm going here. Go ahead, Larry. Yeah, so part of this whole Build Back Better and infrastructure bill, yes, obviously would be additional resources for the IRS. You know, whether those resources are used properly, that's another question. There goes me getting into political statements, which I shouldn't, and I said I wouldn't. As far as IRAs are concerned, yeah, there's certainly discussion around will some of that money be used to kind of build the foundation of IRAs and under the IRA audits. I think yes. I think we can all agree that IRA audits will probably increase. I think the good news is they're going to go after the people that are doing blatant prohibited transactions. Why? Because they want to make sure that it's an open and shut case, right? They don't want to bring something to tax court unless they know they're going to win. So they're going to go after the people that are doing stupid things. And I take the phone calls every single day from people that are not customers of ours. They don't call their custodian. They call me usually, and they tell me what they did. And I tell them, well, I'm glad you're telling me this and you're not a client because if you were a client, I'd have to tell on you distribute your entire account because you did an absolute blanket transaction. So I think the IRS has a ton of easy, fertile, prohibited transaction grounds. I think they will probably target certain custodians that are sending out 5498. So they can look and see what custodians are sending out what 5498 and say, oh, we know that this company doesn't do a very good job of educating their customers, so let's go after them first. Because that's fertile ground. That's going to be easy to run a query off those 5498s, look at value of accounts over a certain amount, and go after those. They also could look at back-to-back years. They could say, oh, this value of this account went from $5,000 to $1 million over the course of just 2 years. That looks suspicious. They'll probably start going after things like that. They'll go after the codes on the 15B box that I mentioned on the 5498 when someone has a single-member LLC. In fact, this goes back to 2015. Ron Wyden ordered the Government Accountability Office to perform a study on self-directed IRAs, and they clearly stated the abuses that are occurring within these single-member checkbook LLC IRAs. We don't offer them at Equity Trust because we know they're incredibly dangerous. So what we do is try to provide technology tools to accommodate the investor needs rather than trying to set something up that sort of circumvents the law. All right. Yes, sir. Yes. Right. Okay, so magical options I heard. So you probably heard about the Masai case. And so what the IRS doesn't like is when you take a little bitty IRA and grow it in a very significant way in a very short period of time and have very, very little skin in the game. So example, let's say you get a property. Does anyone wholesale properties or has wholesale properties? Okay, you could do it with your IRA. You just got to make sure you do it the right way and do it within reason, moderation, okay? You don't want to run your wholesaling business through your IRA because, yes, you'll trigger unrelated business income tax, or they'll just reclassify the income altogether and say, that's not even IRA income. We're not even letting you pay the UBA tax. That's just not even an IRA deal at that point. So if you, let's say, did a wholesale deal where you got a property under contract and you put $100 down, and then you assigned that contract and you made $20,000, it's possible that you could run the stop sign and get away with it. But most likely what's going to happen is they're going to say, you didn't have any skin in the game. What's $100? That's like one night out for dinner, right? That's not really risking anything. So what optically, let's say you put $2,000 down and you make $15,000. $2,000, I would say, would you all agree, is a fairly significant risk, right? If you lose $2,000, you know, for some people maybe not so much, but most people, right, $2,000, that's a risk. So if you're going to do options or short-term deals like that, you want to make sure that you have some skin in the game. Don't do the $100 option or $100 assignment type deal. Put $500, $1,000, $2,000, you're looking even better. Example, I got a guy that's in the self-storage business. He locked down a deal. This is a $500,000 commercial self-storage deal. He put actually $20,000 as an option fee on the deal. So he put $20,000 as his option fee. Brought the buyer and seller together, assigned the option, and made, it was around a $40,000 profit, tax-free in his Roth IRA. $20,000, he took some risk there. All right, now the next part of the question is, well, how many of those deals can I do? How many short-term deals can I do? I can't tell you whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5. No one really knows for sure. The rule of thumb that's used in the industry is if you do more than 2 short-term deals in a year, then you could create unrelated business income tax. Short-term meaning buy, fix, and sell, or option or wholesale, assign, profit back in. Short-term deals. You don't want your IRA looking like it's running itself as a business. If you are somebody that's very active in real estate, you're probably going to be looked at differently than somebody that's not. So if you're running a wholesaling business and then this, you know, magically the next year you make $100,000 and don't pay taxes on it, it's all in your IRA because you did two or three through your IRA, you're probably going to be looked at a little bit differently. So it's not just the amount of transactions, but it could also be the volume, so the amount of money you make. So if you do a wholesale deal and make $50,000, maybe just do one of those a year, right? Be moderate about it. If you do a wholesale deal and you make $10,000, maybe you could do two of those a year, right? So it's an optics game at that point. Facts and circumstances. We can't say how many is too much or how many is okay. Yes. So a couple things there. There are a lot of people that are okay with that. Some people that aren't. That's another facts and circumstances thing. What I'll tell you is I always go back to the stock mutual fund world because people have been doing that with IRAs for many, many years, right? I buy stocks. Some of them I buy in my IRA. Some of them I buy outside of my IRA. One could argue that that's really the same thing. But yeah, you have to be careful with that. I think that would go back to how many you'd be doing in your IRA. And if you take the best deal you had all year and you do it in the IRA, that might not look good. If you take one of your mid-tier deals and do it in your IRA, you're probably going to look a little bit better. You put some skin in the game, $5,000 into the deal, $2,000 in the deal with your IRA, you're looking a lot better. So that's another... Can't give a yes or no answer, a black or white answer on that one. That's a tough one because we don't know. It's never really been tested. Another thing I'll mention is I'm talking about, when we talk about UBIT, we're talking about short-term deals. Not rentals, not private lending, not passive investments. If you're doing passive investments, you don't have to worry about that. Kevin and Cynthia, who I mentioned in a couple of my sessions, they got 14 rental properties. They're not worried about UBIT because it's all passive income. It's just when you do those short-term deals that you have to start being concerned. Another, and this is very advanced, we get into this in some of the advanced training. John Heyer and I have done a lot of sessions on this. And I got a friend of mine, Scott, he's the guy that's in self-storage. Here's what he does. He's got rentals, he's got flips, he's done options, he does private lending in his self-directed IRA, he does a lot of different things. And because he has more than two asset classes, his 5498 shows up as a code. That means that he just has multiple alternative investments. Additionally, he pays some UBIT tax. He's in a real estate syndication, and he's filing a 990T, and he's paying some UBIT tax every year. Because he wants to show that, hey, I'm paying some UBIT tax. Optically, that makes him look a lot better than if he just tries to manufacture every deal and not pay UBIT tax. So as you grow your IRAs and start getting bigger and bigger, that's when you want to start optically doing things and actually paying a little bit of taxes on some things to try to keep people away or keep people at bay. So that's another kind of strategy you can think about. Yes, sir. You just do that one that year. Yeah. Year two, do another deal. Yeah, in moderation. You know, it's the old, what's that? I'm going to screw this up. If pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, right? Just think of that. You know, try to do it in moderation. You got a follow-up? What is the UBIT tax? So it follows the estate and trust tax schedule. If you look at the estate and trust tax schedule, it's called a punitive tax schedule. So income under $2,500 is like a 10% rate. Then $2,500 to $5,000 is like 15%. Then it goes to 20%. Here's where it peaks. $13,000 $50. Any income over $13,050 is subject to a 37% tax rate. It was 39.6. It's now 37%. So I guess it can go back up to 39.6. So it's, you know, it's aggressive, if you will. But some people do it. You know, I got a guy that did an owner finance deal. He bought a house on owner financing, and he had to pay the UBIT tax as it relates to the debt finance real estate. When the deal was all said and done, he made something like $28,000. He paid, oh gosh, it was maybe about $10,000 in taxes. He walked away with $18,000. He wouldn't have been able to, he made like a 50% return on investment, even after the taxes were paid. So sometimes it actually behooves you to pay some of these taxes to grow your IRA. Then you have your optics, right, exactly, yeah, yep, yes. So monthly cash flow coming into your IRA, if you're under 59 and a half, you can't take personal distributions. You just keep it growing. Right, yeah. That's where folks that are a little bit younger, you know, I mentioned in a couple of the sessions, you know, my wife and I, it's a rising tide. We're doing deals inside of our IRA and outside of our IRA. That's correct. You got it. Yep. I'm going to take two more questions because we're just about at time. I had a question here, so I'll go here. First. Yeah, so question is UBIT and unrelated debt financing index. They're the same thing. UBIT, you typically think I'm running my IRA like a business or I'm investing in an LLC that's taxed as a pass-through. Then I got to pay taxes. UDFI is when I'm, it's UBIT when I'm involved in the debt leverage real estate transaction. One of the things that I have in our master course is a blocker corporation. So you could form an LLC, tax it as a corporation, pay the 21% corporate tax, and then the income flows to your IRA as dividend income. So if you are going to do maybe a lot of fix and flip transactions and you want to mitigate your tax liability, still paying some, you're not paying the 37% tax rate, you can look at a blocker corporation structure. And John Heyer, I know, is floating around here. I learned this from him, by the way. So you can check out. I think he's doing a couple sessions this weekend. But just remember that blocker corporation. All right, last question. Yes, sir. Well, you're not going to have a, you're going to have a third-party manager. You're not going to manage that corporation. You're going to have a third-party manager, so it's going to be specially structured. All right, so that being said, Larry, are you speaking next in this room? At 3:30. Okay, I thought maybe you were in here next. At 3:30, though, you got to make sure you see Larry Goins, if you don't know him already. His stuff is the best in the business, I'll say. I had to say that because Larry's a big self-directed IRA fan and a good friend of mine. And you're in the room, that's right. If it was someone else, I would have said the same thing. No, but in all seriousness, guys, we have a booth out in the very front. If you have questions for those that are opening an account, you get a copy of our master course. Come see us. We're here to answer questions all weekend long. But thank you guys for coming. Thank you for the questions. Oh, you're welcome. Happy to do that. Yes.